Welcome to show number 72 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. What is happening, everybody? Hopefully everyone's doing good out there. We're into the month of March. We're going to have some good podcasts. We've been slacking off in 2011, so I think we've only had one in January. So we're going to bring you today's show, where we're going to talk about the industry summit, the sports card industry summit, not the other industries that go on in Vegas. Some of them good, some of them bad, but we're going to the sports card industry summit. That'll be a good one. So we're going to that. That's in a couple weeks. So we'll talk about that. We've got the schedule events, some of the things that are kind of going on there. I kind of wish I had like a sports card shop, because you get all kinds of cool stuff. I think I'll get maybe a few things, but nothing maybe that everybody gets. If you own like a sports card shop, or if you, you know, dump a lot of money into the, I used to dump a lot more money into the industry, I guess, back in those days. But I am buying a few more cards today. So we'll talk about the industry summit. In terms of buying cards, I've been, if you haven't been keeping up with their buying and selling challenge, we have a thread up on the show discussion on our forum, but we also have on our website, if you go to the homepage, you'll see it down at the bottom left hand corner, the trading card challenge. I've been doing pretty good. My brother's been doing pretty good too. Some big sells, some little sells, some sells here and there. My brother sold a nice, I think he got like a $2 or $3 profit off of Seth Rosen or something like that, autograph that he bought for like $2 and sold for $5. So, and that's, most of the sales are happening on checkoutmycards.com, only because it's a little bit easier with eBay. Obviously, you've got to be there and win it. And there are, I think, more opportunities. There's more buyers, and it's a bigger site. Obviously, eBay is like one of the biggest sites in the whole world. So you have to like compete. I've been bidding the last couple of days. I'm not going to say who I'm bidding on, because I do kind of want to win his card. It is for the challenge. I will say afterwards if I get them or not, but they are selling in like that $12 to $13 range, but you've got to get on there and bid. And but sometimes they go for like $16, $18, $20. You know how eBay works. You know, there's kind of a floor price, and then, you know, depending on the card, it's another 10% over that, maybe even higher, 25% on given days. Just, you know, it ends at the right time. People are getting paid on a certain day, or just the guy ends up doing well in a game or something like that. So, but check out my cards. It's pretty cool. I'm glad I'm able to use it. I think the site is pretty cool for just about anyone. I think for me, it's perfect. Not just for, I was actually going to get on there and buy cards anyways. And then my brother and I kind of created this challenge just to make it a little more exciting, and then also kind of create a budget. I think the goal of the sports card challenge is not to see how much money we make and see if we can like rack up $1,000 bills, although it would be nice. And that is the goal. That's what I'm trying to do. But it is also to budget ourselves. We are budgeting ourselves to only $20 a month each. So you could look at it either one of us individually, or if you like to spend a little bit more money on that, on cards, $40 a month. You can look at what we do together. And I think we're up, you know, $6 total off, you know, $100-some-odd investment. So about 5%. We're up about 4 or 5%. And I think that would be a pretty solid return. Obviously, if we're holding cards that have gone down in value and things like that, and we'll see at the end of the year, obviously we've only 2 months in, some of the cards we've been holding aren't like, haven't gone down too much, but I have been, it's amazing the kind of turnover I've been able to get on Check Out My Cards. And I've seen cards go up and down and stuff like that. So people are active on there buying, or at least the sellers that have the cards are active on there raising prices. And even low, I think the site kind of lends itself to kind of lowering the buying pressure. It kind of pushes down prices, just kind of encourages selling, which I think is good. It also kind of encourages buying as well. I was, to finish off my point, the site is perfect for me because I don't really want these cards. I don't want them like, all, I don't have a lot of space. I have a lot of cards that I'm holding for all of you out there, that I hold until you're ready to ship them, or until I'm too lazy, or I finally get off my lazy butt and ship them out to you. But I have been, my brother and I have been staying up on that. So, but that's kind of how that's been going. It's been going good. Hopefully it'll continue to go well. We'll see. I got to go buy a card on eBay this month. So I've got like, about a half month to go, but I figure I better start now because you never know. You don't want to get to those last couple days and have to win a card on eBay because it's sometimes pretty tough, like I said. But we'll also talk, in terms of what we'll talk about today, we'll also talk about five-star football and National Treasures football, kind of the two higher premium sets or whatever you want to call them, the high roller sets that have came out at the end of the year. I think SB Authentic football kind of slipped in there. And there is going to be an exquisite football. I noticed it on Twitter, and then someone threw it up on our forum that a player like took a picture of his exquisite card that he was signing, and so it kind of got leaked out that there is going to be exquisite football. Although I think that was, I mean, they have SB Authentic football and all the other ones, but look for exquisite football if you're a fan of higher end football, or if you're just a fan of football in general, either opening boxes or single cards. There will be exquisite football as well, if you haven't caught that information. But I'm not going to break out right now. I'm going to be lazy on this podcast because I don't necessarily want to do a whole lot of break. It's really much easier when you only have like one or two breaks in a podcast. So that's probably what we'll end up doing. You have to look forward to also either later this week or actually this weekend or probably early next week, we'll do the MLB Prospect Show. And we'll do that before we actually see some of these guys. I'm also going to spring training for a couple days in Arizona, so I'll be able to check out some of these guys in person. So I'll have a little bit better opinion on just a couple teams. I'm seeing the Giants. I think I'm catching the Dodgers. And it obviously kind of depends on who they're playing that day. But I have a couple guys in mind already through our buying and selling challenge, me looking into guys, a couple guys that I bought, but I don't want to be like a total like pump and dump, as they call it. They even call that, that's even a stock term, where you get on a blog or you get on message boards or whatever and pump up this stock being the best thing ever and how they have all, they're going to make all this money or whatever, and you own, you don't tell everybody you own, you know, 15,000 shares of the company, and you're sitting on a 40% loss on it, and you need it to come back. But so I'm not going to do that. I am going to mention some of the prospects, but there is a top 50 list. Guys like Mike Trout is on there. There's all kinds of guys on there, but we'll talk about that. Last year went really well, so, and I hate to take all the credit for it, but I will take a little bit. I basically just looked off the top 50. If you go to minorleaguebaseball.com or even Major League Baseball, I'm sure you might be able to do a search of it, but it is on the official Minor League Baseball site that I see the top 50. It might be even a top 100 list, I'm not sure, but I did pick up at about 20 last year. Then they all, like Starlin Castro was a guy I had never even heard of. Jose Iglesias, I think, is another guy we'll probably talk about even this season again. There's a couple guys, even Jeremy Hellickson, I think we'll talk about again this season. They didn't get their opportunity, but there'll be new guys like Bryce Harper, and the guys everybody knows about. If you're not familiar, you can go to MLB right now. Spring training's going on, and you can check up a lot of rookies, even Bryce Harper. He's actually, the last couple times I've checked, obviously these guys, most of them don't get a whole lot of at-bats, and they don't play every game. The younger guys don't play every, even the veterans don't play every game, so you don't get a full, and they do lots of substitutions. I'm looking at the box scores, that's what I'm assuming. I guess I'll check it out in person and see it myself, but it looks like they do lots of substitutions in spring training and things like that. But some of these guys are getting at bats, so I'm kind of looking at prospects that, hey, if they're getting a lot at bats, and you kind of look and say, hey, this guy plays second, who are they subbing in for him? It's kind of a good way to check a depth chart. It's also great for fantasy baseball because you can kind of say, hey, this guy's looking hot. He's batting 458 and he's got 25 at bats, things like that. And you can say, hey, he might come out the season starting hot, or it might be kind of a guy that's not high on every, not an Albert Pujols or a Hanley Ramirez, might be kind of a fringe player that not many people know about, especially if you're in larger fantasy. I know I'm doing two fantasy baseball leagues, and I'm really sweating my fantasy basketball league right now. I'm so nervous. I'm up by about over a grand, about 1,200, 1,300 points. But there is one player in the league that mathematically has a chance. It's a 12-team league, but mathematically, everybody else has shot themselves in the foot. There's only about 30 days left, or about 28 days left in the NBA season. And obviously, you can't play. There's a maximum number of guys you can play each day. So I'm really sweating it because it's I'm up by a little bit right now, but he definitely has room to come back. So I'm sweating that. And how it ties to fantasy baseball is if I win this fantasy basketball league, I've told my brother I'm going to try to go for the grand slam or the triple crown or whatever you want to call it. I'm going to try to win this basketball. I don't want to try to put all my eggs in one basket because I haven't won anything yet, but I want to try to win this basketball. But then I'm playing in two baseball leagues, so it'd be awesome. Obviously, football is up in the air. Who knows if they have a season? We could have a whole podcast. They're having like labor negotiation right now. It's going to go to court, it sounds like, and that's not good for the owners of the NFL. They're going to get screwed in court. That's what I think. But I definitely think there's going to be an NFL season next season. Or, you know, they might miss training camp. There might be some disruptions in terms of players moving around. That might be a shorter time frame, but I'm pretty sure we're going to have NFL. But to finish my point, I want to try to win the Triple Crown in fantasy, which I would consider winning all three in a row, which would be winning a baseball league, a basketball league, and a football league all in a row. I think the true Grand Slam is winning, I think, a baseball first and then a football and a basketball, because you would have to win the baseball and then you would have a football and a basketball you would have to win and be focused on almost simultaneously. Whereas I think I did it the easy way, winning basketball first and then winning baseball. I basically have all summer where all I can do is focus on baseball. And then during the winter time, I can only focus on football. So I think I've set it up to where it's possible. But this basketball, I'm truly sweating it. And to finish my third point again, to play fantasy baseball this year, I really suck at fantasy baseball, but I have to give myself the goal to win the Triple Crown. But I think if anything disastrous happens in this fantasy basketball league, I'm going to be so devastated that the fantasy baseball is going to turn more into like a job or like into like just torture for me. Plus, I think I'm going to miss both the drafts because I'm going to be out of town both days. So we'll see what ends up happening with fantasy baseball. But I'm truly sweating this basketball right now. And I hope, I'm praying every day that I can win this league. So that'll be one of the happiest days of my life. But one of the other happiest days, definitely the happiest day of me this year, is when my plane touched down in Las Vegas. I'm going to be so excited for many reasons. One is because I'm going to Las Vegas for the first time. Never been to Las Vegas. Heard a lot about it. I love watching poker and gambling on TV. I posted on one of our forums that I play a little bit, and it looks like a couple other people play poker and play other card games online. And you, if you listen to the show enough, you know that I'm not a proponent of gambling. I'm not saying go gamble your money. It's a great way to win money. It's certainly a great way to lose money. And I know that. I think most of the people on our forum and most people I come in contact with are pretty knowledgeable about that. They know to not go overboard, not bring anything to the table or put any bet down that you're not willing to lose. But it is enjoyable. It is kind of fun. And if you're smart about it and you really think about it, I think you can break even. I think for sure you can at least break even or come close to breaking even. There's no reason that if you're a smart, intelligent person that you can't be a break even player playing poker online or any kind of game online. You just have to manage your bankroll in terms of your bet sizing and things like that. So I'm going to be really excited to go to Vegas. I probably do a little bit of sports betting. I'll probably play a little bit of poker, but I don't know if I'll have enough money. You really need like $100. I mean, I'm sure, I told my buddy that I'll probably try to buy into some low buy-in tournaments. I know that I used to play in a poker tournament in my town that I used to have a card store in. I used to play, they used to have a $12 tournament. It was like early in the morning, like 7 in the morning, probably just to drag you up and drag you into the poker room and hope you stick around for the rest of the day. But they had a $12 tournament. That's like my budget right there. That's like my wheelhouse right there. So I'm hoping to find in Las Vegas. You can send me an email at sportscardshow@gmail.com if you know any like sub $50 is my limit. I know there's some $60 buy-ins there, but I'm kind of looking for that $20, $15 buy-in, that $12 plus $5 juice or whatever you want to call it. I'm looking for that. There's going to be March Madness basketball going on, so I'll probably throw some bets down on that. So it'll be exciting. We'll see what happens. But the main reason why I'm there is to go to Las Vegas Sports Card Industry Summit. It's going to be happening from Sunday, March 20th to a little bit later in the week, like Wednesday, it looks like. So 3 or 4 days. Each day there's kind of a different thing to go to. You could, anybody it looks like to can go. I think I signed up as an attendee, but you can be a distributor. You could be like a manufacturer of a card. You can have like a hobby shop. You can be an online retailer. Obviously, I'm like, I don't know, a website guy. I don't know. I don't really have a whole big piece of the pie or a big stake in the hobby, but there was a checkbox for attendee, so that's what I'm going as, and I think just about anybody, if you're in Las Vegas, and it was $379. If I would have signed up maybe a month or two ago, I knew I was going to go to this. I don't know why I didn't sign up for the early bird special. I would have saved about $80. I think it was $299 for the early bird, but so if you have $379, I didn't really have $379 to blow, but that's part of the reason why I'm on a limited bankroll when I go to Las Vegas. I'm going to do a lot of walking around and being like, I wish I could buy that Rolex. I wish I could eat in that restaurant and eat that prime rib, that $45 prime rib. But that's good enough for me. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of cool. We kind of do that with sports. Like, we watch all the games, at least I do. I watch all the games on TV, partly because I don't live in a city. I am blessed to live in California. I'm really close to a lot of teams, and there's plenty of ways for me to get there, and the tickets are fairly affordable. But I watch most of the games on TV, so we're watching it from afar. I'll be doing lots of window shopping in Las Vegas, and I'll be kind of the fly on the wall at the industry summit, and this is what I hope to get out of it. I'm going to bring my phone or another recorder. We're going to test out the phone on the next podcast to see how that works, like recording an interview, me one-on-one with my brother. So we'll see how that works. But I'm hopefully going to get lots of one-on-one, maybe kind of candid conversations. Just whenever I run into people, there's lots of downtime, like little meet and greets. I'll try to go up. I think there's times where everybody's kind of has like a little booth out and you can just kind of walk up and maybe exchange business cards and things like that. I'll exchange maybe a 3 or 4 minute conversation or however long it goes with hopefully everybody from Panini to Upper Deck to Tops to TriStar is going to be there. There's all kinds of people, and even people like distributors like Magazine Exchange, and I believe Blowout Cards is going to be there. DA Card World is going to be there. So there's going to be lots of different. Beckett Media is going to be there. GTS Distribution, which is a really big one. Southern Hobby Supply is going to be there. NBA Properties is going to be there. Historic Autograph Company, which has a set coming out pretty soon, is going to be there. There's going to be tons of different kind of businesses, from people that make cards to people that try to sell them to BGS who like grades them. And so hopefully we'll have some we'll definitely have some conversation. So I'll definitely record as many of those as we can. So we'll produce that podcast either while we're in Las Vegas or the day or so when I get back. But we'll definitely have one. I'm also hoping for a podcast like the night we get in Vegas, when we're all pumped up and we go to this meet and greet. Right when we get there, there's a Sunday meet and greet. So we'll meet some people, kind of get a vibe of the whole thing, kind of like maybe I think right when we get there, we'll be able to see, you know, what kind of participation this is going to be, what kind of energy the conference is going to get off to and things like that. So that's from 5 to 7 on Sunday. So we'll hopefully have enough time from all the debauchery and all the other things that might be going on in Las Vegas to record a podcast, something brief, possibly, to just get that out there. So you probably have that on Monday or Sunday night. We'll see when we get that up. Also, internet, and we'll see. We're hampered by all the technology and things like that, but I'm going to test it all out beforehand and make sure I can record things on the fly, bring them back to my computer and mix them down. That'll be on me. I'll make sure I handle that. But we'll definitely have all kinds of interviews, a second podcast to follow up the event. And if I have time in between the event and why I'm attending, there's all kinds of things. Like I said, I might not even be able to go to all these because I signed up as an attendee. And I don't even want to go to all these. Some of the things on like brick and mortar success and how to price products and for sales and things like that, and you know, selling on eBay or whatever it is. I think most of you already have a pretty good grip on that, and I don't think you need too much on that, but there are statements that the companies might make. There might be all kinds of interesting things that come up, and I'm definitely going to address a couple things. There's some like open there's some open things. There's some like open five-minute idea exchange. I think I got a survey today that I could suggest some questions and things like that. So I'm definitely going to bring up expired redemptions and things like that. I'm not too worried about redemption cards. I think collectors understand that. I might be speaking for a small minority here, but for my own personal opinion, I don't mind redemptions. I do mind products that are loaded with redemptions. If, like, you know, every box or every other box seems to have a redemption, I don't think that's is the true nature of cards. We're not opening cards to get redemption cards to get it 6 months later or whatever it might be. I think if there's a handful of players, whoever it might be, Percy Harvin or whatever, you know, there's a handful of players that seem like they're tough to get, or there's Sidney Rice or whoever was on the Vikings that was tough to get there for a while. It seemed like everybody was having trouble getting his cards back. But, you know, I can understand that. There's some guys that you might not be able to get, even high-end guys, Kobe Bryant and LeBron James or Tiger Woods. These kind of guys that obviously have a lot of things to do on the course and off the course, obviously. So, you know, these guys are busy. So I can understand redemption cards, but keep them to a minimum. Do your best, especially these low-end guys. Just get on the phone to a guy that has a minimum contract and is risking a lockout and maybe not even working next year. Get these guys on the phone and get them to sign some cards. So I don't have a problem with redemptions, but I have a problem with expired redemptions, especially ones that expire within 1 to 2 years. And I'd love to hear hobby shop owners about this and hobby shops' opinion about this and how you've got to buy product within that first, I mean, literally, you've got to buy it within that first 6 to 8 months, because as a hobby shop owner, you do have to factor in some shelf time, because you're going to buy something, and even if you pack it out, it might take you 2 weeks or 40 days or 60 days or 90 days, depending on the season or whatever, and whatever kind of product it might be. So you got to even buy it before that redemption expires, so the customers can come in there and buy it before the redemption date is even within question. So otherwise, you're really running the risk of kind of turning off your clients, you know, especially if they look at it that way. I know you can just blame the company, but there's probably a lot of people that buy from Blowout Cards and buy from DA and buy from the local hobby shop and buy from everywhere on eBay, wherever you can buy boxes. And if you buy it and then you open it up, and we have two examples. One was from San Jose Fuji. If you go to the football card discussion on our fan forum, and even if you're not a member, you might want to check this out. San Jose Fuji posted that he opened up quite a few boxes, I think, of Masterpiece Football, and it contained a Joe Montana autograph that had just expired. It wasn't too many months ago, maybe 4 or 5 months ago. And Joe Montana was like an Upper Deck exclusive for many years. He signed all kinds of, like, back in, he was one of the first autographs way back in like an SBX set in football, like 1999 or maybe even before that. It might have been earlier than that. I'm not exactly sure. But he was one of the first Upper Deck athletes. So I don't understand why they have redemption cards of him in there. But then a couple days actually before San Jose Fuji posted that, I saw a blogger, I Am Joe Collector, posted one where he pulled a Derek Jeter Masterpiece autograph, and it was a redemption. And Upper Deck was basically told him on Twitter, no, we can't redeem that. Sorry. You know, he said he called customer service. They kind of gave him the runaround a little bit. But then someone from Upper Deck on Twitter basically told them, no, we can't redeem that because we don't have a baseball license. There's nothing we can do at this point. And this is a collector that has bought a lot of Masterpieces. I know he works on the sets and things like that. You can go find his whole story on his blog. And I know he signed up for the forum and made a couple posts there too. But San Jose Fuji was real similar. And I think it looks like San Jose Fuji might be able, because Upper Deck is obviously still producing football cards, and it still seems like they have a kind of access to making football cards. So it looks like San Jose Fuji might get a Joe Montana autograph. And I believe he is from that area, given that his name is San Jose Fuji on most forums. So hopefully that gets worked out. But that's one of the things I'm going to bring up is, hey, can we extend these? Can they, you know, why is it in 2 years, you know, can we call Joe Montana, you know, later? Can we get Joe Montana, you know, what's the deal too? Well, why do we have these redemption cards? And then, you know, 5 months after the fact, it's like, oh, we don't know if we'll be able to exchange that for you. Or in the Derek Jeter example, no way we can get that. Well, what happened? Did Derek Jeter never sign that card? I'm pretty sure Derek Jeter had like a direct line to Upper Deck. At some point, he might have been an exclusive athlete or signed. I know he signed a lot of stuff for him. So I'm not exactly sure why, you know, what happens to these cards. So I'm not exactly sure. So I'd like to get some answers from the hobby shop owners, see how they feel about it. Maybe they can put some pressure on these manufacturers to either extend the deadline or maybe provide some more information on, hey, what happens when you produce this Derek Jeter redemption back in 2007 or whatever set it was, and he doesn't sign it, or he does sign it, but then the redemption card goes expired. What happens, you know? What happens to that card, or why didn't it get redeemed when it looked like, at least at that time, you had Derek Jeter on a direct line, you know, much like Tiger Woods and a lot of other athletes, Michael Jordan and LeBron James they had at the time. So I'm not exactly sure what happened. So hopefully I'll get those questions answered there. If you have any questions, I know people have been posting them on the forum. I'll definitely be going over all that next week and make sure I'm prepared for this. If you want to send me any questions or any things you want to know, you can always send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. My brother also put up the schedule of event. If you go to our latest articles, especially if you're listening to this podcast in March 2011, if you're listening to this like a couple months later, you're kind of SOL, as they say, but you can go to latest articles. He just published it in the last few days, so you'll be able to go there. It's also in the Sports Card Directory. Well, that about wraps it up for this first segment, this epic segment. After we come back, we are going to wrap it up, but we will have another segment where we're going to be talking about five-star and national treasures. People were kind of talking a lot about these sets on Twitter. It's pretty obvious. A lot of people really loved one set and really hated another, and that's fine. So we'll talk about which one people loved, which one people hated. And maybe kind of, I don't know, I don't really have an opinion. I don't know if I love or hate either one. But maybe after checking him out a little bit further, maybe I will have an opinion. And you will hear that right after this.
Card Collectors World is a forum where you can buy, sell, trade, and discuss sports, non-sports cards, comics, games, toys, and more. Like to win free stuff? Of course you do. We have contests with loads of free prizes, card drafts, group breaks, and more. It is 100% free to join. Come check us out at cardcollectorsworld.com.
And we are back. Time to talk about some high-end football, some sets that I'll never touch my life, but I might touch some cards out of some of these sets. I'll have to go and see. I know the Greshams and the Shipley five-star sold for like $30-something. I think the Gresham was selling right in that, a little bit more than that, maybe. That was a couple weeks ago, right when it just came out, so I'll have to go back and check and see what they're selling for. I hope they don't dry up, as some people have speculated, and the price ends up going up, because there's only, I say only, I mean, there's a patched jersey version, and the five-star, there's like a patched jersey version, and then there's an autograph version. I think both are nice. Some are numbered out of 100, some are numbered out of like 79 or something like that. So, interesting cards, interesting sets. I want to say that the thing about National Treasures is it's kind of a big set. It has like lots of different things going on. It has like autographed rookies that are stickers, and then you have the patch autograph that are on card and are of the rookie photo shoot guys, like Tim Tebow and Colt McCoy and like Dez Bryant and all those guys, pretty much all the guys that were pretty good during the NFL season too. So, but then you have, you know, like Desmond Briscoe, I think might be a solid player. Chris Ivory's in there. Joe Webb, quarterback for Minnesota, that might have a really nice opportunity next year. Are in there as the autograph version, and there's a big base set, 200 card base set, and there's all these, there's cut autographs and Ring of Honor autographs, and there's like these patch insert sets, dual autograph, 8-way autographs, lots of different stuff going on in there. And I would say The same is pretty much true for Five Star. There is a lot of stuff going on, but it's pretty much the same stuff over. You have like quad jersey relics, and you have triple jersey relics, and then you have like dual jersey relics. So you just kind of, it almost seems like you have different levels of things. You have like eight-way books, you have triple books, you have dual books, and then you have the single book. So it's a, I think it's a simpler set from my, just from looking at different kind of things. Five Star is set up a little bit simpler. A lot of the cards are fairly similar, and I would say that the design in terms of the cards, I'm not saying like to actually design the cards and lay them out, I have no idea how long that takes. I actually laid a Tim Tebow out this weekend this last weekend, just to see how long it would take. It takes a long time, and the card looked like crap. And it wouldn't work for like a 30 card set because his name, like some guy's long name, wouldn't fit, like Rashard Mendenhall's name wouldn't fit or whatever. So it's pretty tough. It's pretty tough work. But in terms of what they did with Five Star, I think they did a pretty good job here. It is a limited checklist in terms of, excuse me, I got kind of like, I was just drank a sip of Pepsi, and it's like, you know, you get that like burp, I guess it would be. I'm trying to think of a polite way to say it, but we'll just come right out of it. Lots of guys listen to the show. I'm sure you guys don't mind. But Five Star just seems like it has a little bit more limited checklist, a little tighter checklist, as I like to say, in terms of not a lot of frill, in terms of like crazy subsets with different names or whatever. It's pretty much, you know, patch autographs and autographs and, you know, pretty nice looking cards. National Treasures is, you know, kind of the same thing that they did with basketball. There's some different insert sets, and there's a mix of legends and stuff like that. And there's a pretty broad, fairly broad checklist in National Treasures. Both came out as the SRP being $400. And what's interesting is Five Stars, actually, I just brought up on, like, completed auctions on eBay for, like, the last couple of days. The cheapest National Treasures box you could have gotten was like in the $345 to $350 range. So it's actually selling for a little bit less, but there has been a lot of boxes that sold right around $400, but that was with free shipping. So obviously as a dealer, you're not selling it at full SRP, which rarely happens, but actually the cheapest Five Star box is $445 plus $9 shipping. So that's $450. And they kind of go up from there. The most expensive one is $490, $498 with free shipping. There's a $490 plus $10 shipping. So that's $500. So that's a lot of money. So those have actually gone up in price. And, you know, I think it's kind of a reaction from collectors. They seem to like Five Star a little bit better. Like I said, I think it's a little bit tighter checklist. I think with these high-end stuff, that's what collectors kind of want. They want they want autographs of top-name players, the top rookies. They want them on card. They want patches. They don't want, you know, random rookies in there or random, you know, just random guys in there. Like, I was going to say Blair White, but he might be fairly good. But David Geddes, Danero Alexander, Michael Humanwani, Max Komar is an exchange card. These guys might be in Five Star, but it just seems like the checklist is a lot tighter. I mean, I'm looking at like the quotable autographs, which have like I'm looking at Eli Manning. It says Super Bowl XLII MVP number 10, but it has Emmitt Smith, John Elway, Steve Young, Jim Brown, Peyton Manning, Frank Gore might be like the lower tier. Chad Ochocinco might be a low tier, but it's still a pretty quality guy. And in terms of the rookies, it's a pretty tight checklist of all the type guys, from, you know, Tim Tebow to Sam Bradford to Jermaine Gresham and those guys. And that kind of holds true for most of the set. I don't see a lot of the lower end rookies in this set. So I think that kind of separated it. I think it might be a sign to collectors, or not really collectors, I think it's really assigned to the companies that you don't need these big checklists. You don't need a bunch of different players. You need the right players, and you need to deliver the set. I don't know if that's as profitable, but it just seems like if you throw in all Mike Kafta and all these random ass guys, it just seems like it kind of waters down the set. You end up pushing down the SRP, and things like that. You know, the basketball obviously was different. With basketball, you had the Blake Griffins blow up and the Tyreeks were blowing up. Basketball, if you National Treasure, actually sells for about $600. I think when I was looking at it one time when Blake was blowing up, it might actually sell for more than that, but boxes that sell for, it was an SRP of $400. So I was thinking as a hobby shop owner, and this is a really good point. I get a lot of emails about, hey, you know, why do you always say it's really tough? I think I even say it on my wholesale list page. Hey, it's really tough to make money buying and selling cards. It's really tough, not just because the margin and the markup is only 10, 15%, and you're competing against people that have websites and make money in all kinds of different ways other than buying and selling cards. It's really tough to compete against those people. But another reason is these products came out right around the same time. And as a hobby shop owner, you would have pre-bought these probably right around the same time. You would have had to fork over your money, or however you do it with your distributor, you had to commit it. You would have had to at least commit to buying a case or two of these products at the same time, probably several months ago. So you would have done that as a hobby shop owner. You might be coming off selling National Treasures basketball, which came out in August, and you might have done well on that. So you might have been thinking, hey, National Treasures football, Tim Tebow, Sam Bradford, hey, that sounds good for me. I'll get a case of that. Five-star football, it's something new. I'm not really sure about it. You might have done a case of that. Maybe even you did two cases of it. If you were smart, you would have done a lot of cases of it, as it looks like. But the thing is hobby shop owners are going to buy both these products. If you're going to stock five-star, 90% of the time, you're going to probably have the money and have the capital to stock National Treasures as well. Not all hobby shops are going to stock both of these products, because to have $400 sitting on the shelf, obviously they pay less than that, but it's not much less than that. To have that shit sitting on the shelf, I almost said something else, sitting on the shelf, especially if it's four, five, six boxes, we're talking about the whole month's rent for your building that you're in. That's a lot of money. So you're not going to go overboard with either of these two products unless you're a blowout cards and a DA who is supplying a very large amount of people. Your mom and pop hobby shop, which is a lot of people that are going to be at this Las Vegas summit. These are the kind of people that can only afford one, two, three cases. I say afford, they only have the customers that come in the door to afford only buying one or two cases of these product. And this is a great example. This is to finish my point. This is why it's so hard to make money in this business, because you would have bought, I guarantee you would have bought a case of National Treasures, and you would have bought a case. And if you might have been smart, say you were smart, you bought 3-to-1 cases. You probably still would have got burned pretty bad. If National Treasures is selling for $350 on eBay, it's going to be really tough. Even with a case discount and pre-selling it early, that's leaving yourself with all the fees. The PayPal fee is ridiculous on a $300 sale, and your eBay fee, it's basically 15%. So you're minusing $35 off that. So you're really selling it in the low $300 range. You're definitely losing money on that sale, unless you really pre-bought this at a great price. So you would have lost several, maybe $100 a box on that sale. Say you didn't get, I'm sure we looked at just the last couple days on the sales. Maybe when National Treasures first came out, you could have pumped it out, or if you had pre-sales selling at SRP, that's kind of the business of sports cards. And if you want to be real successful buying and selling, you got to do pre-sales. You got to have a customer base. You got to have people coming in there and buying it on the first day, because if you're buying it on pre-order, you can either, if you don't want to specialize in having the latest product and always having it, then you don't have to worry about pre-orders, and you don't have to worry about moving this stuff out for close to SRP. Because what ends up happening is blowout cards is going to drop. Blowout can't sell this stuff for $400. If it's selling for $359 on eBay, he has to lower his price, and so does everybody. And once he does it, and I mean, it's DA might do it first, or whoever out there might do it first, and so everybody else has to do the same thing. Basically, it's whatever eBay does. It's really eBay sets the price, and then the others, to stay competitive, have to do it, and so they naturally lose money on some products, and they make money on some other products. So that being Topps Five Star, but my point being, as a hobby shop, you can make heck of money buying and selling boxes. If you would have bought Five Star, you would have made $100 a box. Yeah, but if that was the only, that's kind of like, I have stocks that are up like 200-300%. I remember being on this show in 2008, and you can go back and listen, in December, November 2008, when everybody was broke, gas was $5 a gallon, everybody was homes was worth half as much as what it was the month before, and the stock market had dropped probably like 30-40%, because I think like Lehman Brothers or Goldman Sachs or one of them went broke or whatever. They're probably both broke for all I know still. But I was telling everybody, move all your money into the stock market. And it was a great move on my part. I have stocks. Yeah, if I moved all my money into ELGX, which is up like a huge amount, like 300% for me, if I moved all my money, I didn't move a very significant amount of money. So I'm saying this stock's up 300%. Don't think I'm ready to go buy a Corvette with that money. Trust me, I couldn't even afford to pay my rent even after it's gone up. So it tells you how little money I invested. But thank God I did, because it went up a lot of money. But imagine if I invested $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, or even $100,000, like kind of big timers do, that's, you would be up a lot of money, just an insane amount of money. Just you would have created so much wealth for yourself. But that's kind of the same thing with Five Star. Would you have put all your money into Five Star? No, you would have not dropped 10 grand on 10 cases of Five Star and then not bought anything else for the rest of the year. That would have just been insane. You have to balance it out. You have to have, you know, you have to buy just a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And that's why buying stocks and buying and selling boxes are very similar. You have to spread it out, unless you're just a genius, unless you just knew. I think everybody assumes, especially if you're in the know, Five Star was going to be a real, did I know it was going to go up $100 box and start selling for $500-$600 box? No, I didn't. Did I imagine National Treasures going from a $400 SRP to really closer to $350-ish or $320-ish even? I could see it maybe falling further once the new rookies come out and new quarterbacks, or Cam Newton's like the hottest dude in Cincinnati. Let's hope not. But so we'll see what happens. But that's kind of my point is, yes, you can make money buying and selling cards, but at the same time, you probably would have broken even or lost. You probably would have definitely lost money on Treasures, and you would have definitely made money on Five Star. But to balance it all out, obviously with your fees, I mean, even a $500, $600 box of Five Star is going to run you a huge amount in fees and things like that. So it's a big gamble when you're playing with these big things, and I'd be curious to see. I'm definitely going to hopefully have conversations with some small, you know, obviously we're going to get Upper Deck, referring to the Las Vegas convention. My mind's like always on Vegas. But to go back to that, you know, we're going to have the Upper Decks and the Tops and the Paninis for sure. I'll probably definitely get all of them at least once. But hopefully definitely get some smaller people, some smaller hobby shop owners, the mom and pop owners, or the guys that travel around to card shows, or guys that are trying to make it, sell it online, or whatever it might be. And hopefully there's some attendees like me that are just kind of random people that are just showing up just for fun, just because they really like cards, they like the business, they like to see where it's going and hope it keeps progressing and things like that. So hopefully I'll be able to talk to just some average people, maybe get people aware of some hobby shops that might be in your area and things like that. So hopefully we'll kind of get that. And maybe we'll pose some questions, some tougher questions to, like, how many cases of National Treasures did you buy and how many cases of Five Star did you buy and things like that. And how do you balance that out? And if they mess with the high-end stuff, or what's their kind of sweet spot product? We'll see if anybody's willing to divulge that information. And it always I imagine they might, because it always varies on the region, you know. Like in some regions, basketball sells great. And then there's some places like where I was where basketball didn't sell a whole lot, but football sold pretty good. Football probably sold the best. And there's some places and a lot of places where baseball just kills it and they don't sell anywhere else. But definitely overseas. I was thinking about this today. I think I posted on the forum. I was thinking about like the popularity of the leagues in terms of domestic, which is like U.S. And you could probably even throw possibly even like Canada in there as well. But thinking about the United States, I think football is number one. Baseball has really heated up, I think, especially out here in the West Coast. Everybody loves the Giants out here. Everybody just has always been a Giants fan, I think, out here, or always felt they were a Giants fan. And then when they're a winner, they just become like that proud fan that just is always willing to show off the gear and support the team a little bit. I think they're going to sell out a lot of games and sell a lot of tickets this year. And they got me going to spring training. They got me spending a whole bunch of money going to spring training. So I guess the Giants got me too. So I guess I'm jumping on the bandwagon of sort, although I've watched and listened to many, many games of the Giants on the radio. A lot of games on the radio. I've probably listened to as many games on the radio as I've watched on TV, even in this era of bootlegging off TV and everything. But it's going to be interesting. I forget the point I was going to make, but I'm sure I was just rambling on about nothing in particular. But I'm kind of excited about baseball starting. I'm definitely excited about going and checking out this Vegas convention, seeing what's going on with cards. Again, if you have any questions, you can always send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. I'll try to address as many as possible. If you have anybody specific you want me to address a question to, please let me know. I'll try to get as many of those as I possibly can if I get any. But if I don't, I'll make up my own questions and I'll make up my own things that I want to know about. But I'm kind of, you know, from following Twitter and following message boards, I go to like all the message board. I haven't hung out. I know Beckett. I don't think we've talked about it on the show, but I know Beckett. I haven't gone there that much since they've redone their site, but it has worked every time. I think they've worked out their, like, whatever. I'm sure they have, like, complicated, like, they have the card data on one database, and they have, like, another database where you can log in and, like, post articles and stuff, and they probably have, like, you know, kind of a, like a lot of different things going on there. And they have like the trading system on there. And then they have the place where you can like sell cards. There's a lot of stuff going on that website. So I can imagine the IT mess. And as you have just working from a company that's not similar, it wasn't a baseball card company, but a similar company that was like building from the ground up, building kind of a custom platform where you bring in an IT guy and he works for a while and then he, you know, he moves on. He's naturally a young guy and he moves on to another job or finds another place to work or whatever, gets burnt out and decides to go somewhere else. You have all these guys working and code is always like kind of one of those things. So it's really tough. But I've gone back to Beckett. I noticed, I just checked out the forum. I got to probably go at least sign up for it at some point. But my point was I visit all the forums except for that one because I think they started it fresh again. I think this is like the third time in the last like 2 years Beckett has like reset their forum. So if you've like posted there, I promise to my fan forum, if you ever sign up for my fan, out of my own control, out of like anything out of my own control and something really funky happened. I back up our sites on my own computer and I do all kinds of crazy stuff. But if something really crazy, I'll never reset it. I'll never like make you re-sign up and stuff like that. I say that now. I'm knocking on wood. I hope that would just be a nightmare. So I can imagine the people that spent lots of time on Beckett building up like 10,000 posts or being like the number one poster or whatever, or being whatever, one of the people that were first to sign up. There's some like, you know, some good things about it. There's some like, you know, cred that goes along on a message board and to have to like rebuild that up. I guess it's kind of fun. You know, it's kind of like a baseball game. Like I just got MLB The Show. It's actually a pretty good, it's like, you know, about the same every year, but since I haven't played the other one in a long time and it's baseball season, it's fun to play. But like every year, I forget the point. I was going to make a good point there. I was going to talk about MLB The Show. And I can't remember, but I got MLB The Show. It's actually a good game. I kind of recommend it. And you actually, now I remember my point. That's usually what ends up happening is I forget my point and I start rambling on like I am due now. And then I forget it. But it's kind of like MLB The Show. You start your team. You got your team all juiced up. And it's like, great. You got all these power hitters. Got all these prospects. You traded away Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner and got the number one picks. And then all of a sudden, like, the game freezes and you lose all your data and you got to start all over. That's kind of like the Beckett forums. Like, that's happened to me a lot in Madden. It's why I don't buy Madden anymore. I got frustrated with, like, the game freezing or that you couldn't continue on to the game anymore because you couldn't get, like, the free agents to, like, there weren't enough free agents in the pool or whatever. I don't know. There was all kinds of problems with Madden. So, but that's kind of how, like, resetting a forum is. But I don't know where I'm going with that. We probably ran out of time. My voice has about had it. But that's the podcast today. But you have plenty more to come. We'll come at it before we go to Vegas with my brother. And we'll have the MLB second annual MLB Prospect Preview Show before the season even starts. We're going to call out the big names. So get your wallets ready. Get ready to buy some prospects. We're going to have a show in Las Vegas. probably the night or the night after we get there. Talk about the convention. Talk about some of the things going on. We may have another one while they're there. I don't know. It depends on how much free time I have. Depends on how unlazy I get as I'm out roaming Las Vegas and those kind of things. But then we'll definitely have one when we come back. Well, it'll be kind of a compilation of all the interviews I get, all the one-on-ones, some follow-up, some spring training talk. We'll probably throw that in on our first podcast in Vegas. So you got a lot to look forward to. I know I've been lazy in 2011, but we're going to turn that switch off, and we're going to turn on the turbo mode, and we're going to get you this podcast and at least, I guess, two or three more this month. So you have at least two or three to look forward to this month. Some exciting stuff. Looking forward to bringing it to you, but that's about it for today. Hopefully everything's going well for you. Don't work too hard. Save some money because you might have a trip like me. I'm glad I've saved some money. I'm going to be like totally flat broke when I come back from, hopefully not. I might be though if I really have bad luck or really have, I don't think I'm going to gamble a lot. What I really imagine myself doing is probably spending a lot on dinner, like dinner and lunches. I can imagine I'll walk by like an amazing looking restaurant or just smell like whatever it is, some Mongolian barbecue or especially a steak, some steak. I bet there's just some amazing steakhouses there and things like that. Probably going to spend a lot of money on. I'm probably going to have some like $100 dinners while I'm there. So I'll probably go broke, probably eating in Las Vegas. I probably won't gamble more than $100 to $200. I'll really start sweating if I get over $200 and I haven't won anything or I haven't been able to spend 3 or 4 days on $200. If it goes quick, I will start sweating that, but hopefully I probably won't spend that much on gambling. Probably won't spend much on other things, even like drinks. I think you could sit there and put nickels in a slot machine and get a couple free drinks, but I probably will spend a lot on food, so we'll see. Maybe I'll find some cheap buffets. If you have any cheap places or affordable places or those like $9.99 prime ribs that aren't like a piece of rubber in Las Vegas, you can send those to me. I'm looking for any Vegas recommendations too. I know a lot of you probably have been. I've never been. I'm open for anything on strip, off strip. I am not going to go to any of the 8 or I guess maybe 18 or 21 year old venues there. I honestly have no interest in that. And also, I know my girlfriend listens to this podcast, and I know she's probably listening right now, and she's thinking she has a great boyfriend. So I'm not going to go to any of those, not for that reason, but also because it's extremely expensive, and I have a wonderful girlfriend. So I have no reason to do that. I'd much rather spend like $300 trying to win a poker tournament or something, because then you could win like, if you enter like a $200 or $300 poker tournament, which is about what you could spend in Vegas just about anywhere, you can win a lot of money. So I know there's like $100 tournament at the Venetian. I obviously follow poker a lot, and I've read up that there's a really nice tournament. It's called like the Venetian Deep Stack. I think it's $120 or $160. It might not even be that expensive. I'm not exactly sure how much it is, but it's not more than like $150. They say it's got a really good structure. If you stay in it and you get chips and you play good, you're going to be playing for a decent amount of time, and you're going to feel like you got your money's worth. So even if it sounds like if you bust out and you try to play like turbo and play hecka fast, you're going to feel like you got enough play for your turbo mode there. So we'll see what happens, but I'm not sure. I'm definitely have a small budget when I go to Vegas, and it probably will be expired by the time I get back. So hopefully we have enough money to pay for our bandwidth and our bills that we've got associated with sportscardradio.com. I promised 3 or 4 podcasts, so hopefully I'll be able to pay the bills. Hopefully, if you want to advertise on the podcast, I'm kind of booked on banner ads on the site, but maybe we'll have to open some things up if we run bad in Vegas. But that about wraps it up for this show. I think we ran pretty good on this show, so we better wrap things up before I keep rambling on. It's time for me to go. Hopefully you've enjoyed this show, and I think the ones coming up, we'll have my brother probably on 2 or 3 episodes the rest of this month. So those will be fun, and we'll have a lot of fun things in store for you. Hopefully everything's going well. I'll see you guys later. We are out of here.